Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 48 Hours ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Picture yourself alone in the middle of nowhere, and there's somebody following you.
He went on his way, we so thought, and then we went on ours. But in reality, he really followed us up there.
On Deadly Nightmares, the true crime podcast from ID, listen to real stories of ordinary people stalked by serial killers and attackers.
Please, tell me we're not going to die.
Listen to Deadly Nightmares on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This is WHBC AM Canton, News Talk 1480 WHBC.
The trial begins today for a local woman accused of killing her husband on New Year's Eve.
It had happened so fast, and he had put his hand over my nose and my mouth, and I couldn't breathe. And he's shoving me, he's like, go to the bedroom, bitch, go to the bedroom. And I'm going, I'm like, okay, I'm going.
My name is Scott Roeder. I'm an evidence specialist. I received a phone call, a domestic homicide case, a woman who's being accused of murder.
And I'm like, I'm gonna call the cops. And he grabbed me and he shook me like this. And he took my phone and he goes, I'll give you a reason to call the cops, you dumb bitch. I'll give you a reason. And he walks out, he left. He left the room. And he went down the hallway screaming it over and over again.
Everybody was really interested in this trial because it was this small town with this beautiful young lady who's being accused of this horrible crime.
I walked down into the hallway and I had the gun at my side. He said, where do you think you're going? And I said, I'm leaving, I'm going. And he started to walk towards me and I raised the gun.
We've got a dead man and we've got a woman whose life is hanging in the balance. She's the only eyewitness to this situation.
And then it was over. It was so quick. And he was on the ground and I was still holding the weapon out, and I was still pulling the trigger.
Some people were immediately making a judgment for, this is a battered woman.
My daughter is innocent. She's innocent of murder.
And then some other people were immediately making a judgment, cold-blooded killer.
How could she even do that?
I think she's a monster.
People want to rush to an opinion. They want to rush to the story before the evidence even has been analyzed. I stick to the physical and the forensic evidence.
What was your purpose in firing that first shot?
To stop Rob. I thought my life was in danger. I was just trying to stop him. I was defending myself.
Evidence. In a criminal court of law, it can send a defendant to prison for life or prove their innocence beyond a reasonable doubt. Tonight, on a special 48 Hours, we'll go behind the closed doors of legal strategy sessions and cutting-edge evidence analysis to show just what it takes to convince a jury that you have the most compelling evidence of all.
Sometimes I'll work for the defense, sometimes for the prosecution, sometimes for the plaintiff, sometimes for the defendant. I look at the totality of the evidence and put it together, kind of like a puzzle. This isn't about emotion. We evaluate the evidence, we conduct experiments, we reduce it to a visual presentation, and then we try to demonstrate that for the benefit of the jury. If you hire me, you get what you get, and I'm going to do my best to demonstrate what I think the truth is. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what we do.
"48 Hours," the Evidence Room, will be right back.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations. And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Well, 2 months ago, I moved to Los Angeles, California to open up a new office. Just settling in, you know, I get the phone call on this domestic homicide case, of course, back in my hometown. So, you know, yesterday I jumped on an airplane, and now I'm back in Cleveland. I lived in Cleveland all my life, born and raised here.
Scott Roeder has come home to work a murder case.
We've got an interesting case. A young lady is being accused of murder. She shot and killed her husband, apparently over some sort of a domestic dispute.
Cleveland defense attorney Ian Friedman has hired Scott and his company to help convince a jury that his client had only one choice: kill or be killed.
Thanks for coming on board.
Oh, sure. Appreciate my pleasure.
Scott Roeder is not a lawyer, not a detective, and not a forensic scientist. His specialty, using evidence to create visual presentations of a crime.
Who's the defendant in this case?
The defendant in this case is Colleen McKernan, 20 years old, white female, married to Rob McKernan.
The victim.
The victim, yes.
Colleen has been charged with one count of murder. Mm-hmm. All right, this happened on New Year's Eve. In the minutes just before, you know, the ball would drop.
New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2014. Colleen and Robert McKernan went out to celebrate with friends, but wound up at each other's throats. Back at home, their night ended with this call.
911, you need police, fire, medical.
Listen to me. I'm really drunk, and my husband put his hands on me again.
Where are you?
I killed him, my God.
Where are you?
Rob was found lying face up with 10 shots, 9mm casings surrounding the body. All 10 shots hit. We've got 8 to the trunk, 2 to the head. There's not going to be any dispute as to who the shooter was.
Right.
There's not going to be any dispute to what the weapon was.
Right. We've got an interesting situation here with regard to, was it self-defense or was it murder? That's the big question of the day, right? Are there any witnesses, neighbors, you know, through open windows or heard yelling or anything like that at the time, at the location of the actual shooting?
So the only thing that we have, there was no one else in the house. No one saw any fighting, no screaming inside the house. And that's why I'm pretty comfortable saying to you again, there are really only two parties who could have stated what was going on inside the house at the time.
And now only Colleen McKernan is left to tell that story.
The state's going to say, ladies and gentlemen, she committed murder. And we're going to say that she reasonably feared for her life. And as a result, she did what she needed to do. There is a history that we will be bringing forward at trial of physical and mental abuse at the hands of Rob. That night, he was physically assaulting her. She felt that she had to leave the house, and he was not going to allow that to happen. So she went and got the firearm for the sole purpose of leaving.
I believe that Colleen McKernan is a cold-blooded murderer, and justice needs to be served for Rob.
Jennifer Dave, lead prosecutor for the state of Ohio, disputes Colleen's claim of abuse. Day suggests that her true motive was money. Weeks before the shooting, Rob's life insurance policy was changed, making Colleen the sole beneficiary.
She was going to get 100%, which means that, you know, had he died, she would get $200,000. She saw her opportunity on December 31st.
At the end of that tumultuous night,
we believe that the evidence showed that she shot him when he was trying to leave. He had his coat on, his shoes on.
The jury, you know, they're going to hear the state say murder, murder, murder. And I need them to see that she had no choice that evening. If she were to protect herself, she had no choice but to do what she did.
Which is where Scott's skills come into play.
Ian basically asks you to recreate what happened that night.
Yes.
He and his team will build a visual model of the defense's theory of the crime for the jury.
I think it would be invaluable if we could show them, okay, using technology today, if we can show them what happened that night in the house.
Absolutely.
It's very simple, and it's a situation that I believe people will understand. Once we're done showing them what happened, they'll see that you could have put anyone in her shoes that evening, and any of those people would have felt that in order for them to leave that house safely, they would have had to have done what she did. It's sad, but that was the choice he made that night. Okay?
Right. Well, that was interesting. I think they definitely have their case strategy laid out well. So I think the next step here is going to be to collect my staff up, go over all of the evidence, and hand out the assignments and really start the reconstructive process.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Since starting The Evidence Room in 2002, Scott Roeder has worked on hundreds of cases.
We work all across the country and sometimes across the world.
How do you measure success?
Well, I think, you know, success is, it's not about money or win-loss ratio. We're trying to put forth, you know, our process and our methodology, hopefully to find justice.
Which is what they were hired to do in 2014 for probably their most notorious client, South African superstar, the Blade Runner, Oscar Pistorius.
The stunning murder case against the Blade Runner.
He was charged Thursday with murdering his girlfriend.
Pistorius was tried for shooting Reva Steenkamp in his home, claiming he thought she was an intruder.
It's a case that's riveted the world. The Blade Runner, the fastest man on no legs, charged with killing his girlfriend.
You fired at Reva.
I did not fire at Reva.
You referred to this incident, or this occurrence, as an accident. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Roeder's team was brought in by the defense to illustrate what Pistorius says happened that night.
Oscar, in his story, he said that he woke up in the middle of the night and heard a sound in the bathroom.
It was at this point that I heard a window open in the bathroom.
What did you think at the time, Mr. Pistorius?
My lady, that's the moment that everything changed.
And it was just this unfortunate circumstance where as he approached his girlfriend, who was hidden in the toilet inside of the bathroom, and he was screaming for her to call the police, thinking that she was in the other room. And unfortunately, he shot his girlfriend, Reva, and accidentally killed her.
I was crying out for Reva. I was screaming, and I sat over Reva, and I cried.
Though never shown in court, this animation helped the Pistorius defense team develop its strategy.
So I was still busy checking the bathroom, and then I heard...
In this video, the defense had Oscar reenact his movements as part of their research. Pistorius, in another house, demonstrated what that night was like without his prosthetic legs as he made his way to the bathroom.
And I felt that it was a very honest rendition of the story and that he was not guilty of murder.
But Pistorius was found guilty, not of murder, but of culpable homicide.
In layman's terms, manslaughter. According to the judge, Oscar Pistorius did not intentionally kill Reva Steenkamp, but acted negligently in firing four shots through his bathroom door.
Pistorius was sentenced to 5 years in prison, but later his conviction was changed to murder, and his sentence doubled.
Today we're going to be discussing a new case.
48 Hours hired Scott Roeder as a CBS News consultant to give us a rare inside look at what it takes to build a defense case.
It's a domestic homicide. We're going to be defending a woman by the name of Colleen McKernan.
Tell me about the team. Who's on the team?
Amy Metzger. She is my logistics coordinator. Patrick Mooney, my biomedical illustrator. Marcus Sidoti, criminal defense attorney.
She was a military police officer.
She was, yeah. I think that's pretty interesting.
15 months in Turkey, deployed to Afghanistan. So she has 4 years in the 4 years of active duty in the Air Force.
In the fall of 2013, 25-year-old Colleen and 28-year-old Rob, both living in the small town of Massillon, Ohio, were introduced by a mutual friend. Not quite 7 months later, they were married.
And they had only been married for less than a year at the time that this happened.
This is not your usual wedding photo, the bride posing with guns. At the time of the shooting, she worked in a bank, and he worked as an oil driller.
Now, the husband also has military experience, military training.
And, it turns out, he also had a history of domestic abuse as well.
These documents that are sitting out here are the prior history of abuse against other women.
I believe that there's indications in the record that Rob had multiple restraining orders against him from prior girlfriends and prior relationships.
Also in the record, this 2013 911 call from one of Rob's former girlfriends.
Fast one, please. Hi, I need to speak with a police officer about filing a police report for someone trying to kill me.
And this person's name?
Robert McKernan.
An ex-girlfriend.
Ex-girlfriend.
She said pretty much immediately he started becoming extremely controlling. She said that was her first red flag. And then the domestic violence was shortly thereafter.
Does she state that he ever struck her?
Yes.
And Colleen had called 911 before about Rob?
She did, yes.
Excuse me, this is Colleen McKernan. I called you earlier. You left me a voicemail.
Right. You called and you said that you did not want your husband coming back there, but you hung up on me twice. What's going on?
Okay, are you hurt in any way? No, I'm not hurt. No, he put his hands on me, but he did not leave a mark on me.
But is there enough evidence to show that Colleen was abused by Rob? Prosecutor Jennifer Dave says no.
There was no photos, no police reports.
The state's position is Colleen used Rob's history as a cover for murder.
I know there are true women out there that are battered. She's not one of them.
I'll tell you right now, I hope Colleen's story vets out, because if it doesn't, we're going to be able to tell pretty quickly.
Every day, our world gets a little more connected, but a little further apart. But then, there are moments that remind us to be more human.
Thank you for calling Amica Insurance.
Hey, I was just in an accident.
Don't worry, we'll get you taken care of.
At Amica, we understand that looking out for each other isn't new or groundbreaking. It's human. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Colleen Marie McKernan.
McKernan? Is that how you say that?
McKernan.
Okay, Colleen. Have a seat right there. I'll get them cuffs off as soon as I can.
Colleen McKernan spent the first hours of 2015 in the custody of the Massillon Police Department. Her husband, Robert McKernan, never saw a single second of the new year.
What's Colleen's demeanor when she's down at the police department?
She would be excited, upset, crying, devastated. And then I believe she kind of just kind of calmed down, and she stopped crying, and she just, I think, was probably in a state of shock.
You know, a lot of people in trauma, you know, are just, you know, in shock and just horrified.
State prosecutor Jennifer Dave has a different opinion.
Can I use the restroom?
Yeah, give me one second.
She's sitting there, and you can see her literally after the detective leaves the room. She picks up those papers to see what's on them, and then she puts them back, and then makes sure she turns them to make sure they're neat. You know, so this was cold and calculated. She knew exactly what she was doing.
This picture was taken, what are we looking at?
Well, this is a picture of Colleen taken at the police department right after she had surrendered to law enforcement. And you can clearly see that her entire face is covered in blood.
And the blood came from?
The blood on Colleen's face is as a result of her giving CPR to Rob after she shot him.
Hey, you're being charged. You understand you have to be charged, okay? Because the probable cause is there. Doesn't mean you're convicted of anything, okay? There's probably more to the story. We don't know. We're not here to judge you, okay?
And when police arrived, what did she tell them?
She told law enforcement that she wasn't going to let him do it to her again. He was going to hurt me.
And I couldn't. That was the
gonna hurt me. I'm just gonna let it happen again. I totally care.
And I think that's when, in her mind, she was thinking that the situation was self-defense.
I told him. I said, next time he touches me, I'm gonna kill him. I didn't really want him to die, though.
You know, she claimed at that time, you know, hey, I was just defending myself.
Continuing their work, the evidence room team focuses on Colleen's state of mind.
I hear that she's talking about all the fear that she had. I don't see a very serious physical interaction prior to the shooting.
He was pulling her hair.
Exactly.
He was possibly on drugs.
Okay.
He's got a long history of violence against women that's documented over years and years and years.
Fair.
It's in her mind, so go
fair,
on.
Fair enough. In essence, she's got to say, I can't leave. You know, there's going to be imminency to serious physical harm. So I had to rely on my training, and then I shot him.
I think that if I'm holding a gun and there's a larger male coming towards me, in a threatening manner, I would shoot, for sure. I hear often from other females, from, you know, my friends, that why not just shoot him in the leg? Why wouldn't you shoot him in the leg? Because she's trained to shoot to kill. If I'm shooting someone, I'm gonna shoot to kill them.
Right.
Was it self-defense or was it murder? That's the big question of the day, right? But all of this other information is, okay, how close were they? How far were they? You know, is there evidence to demonstrate that he was attacking her? This is an autopsy photograph of Robert. Why don't you guys go ahead and take a peek at that? Now, he had had two shots to the face, one through the right eye and one into the mouth. Go ahead, pass that picture around. You guys see anything interesting on that picture that might help us out?
Is that stippling?
Yep. That's a close-range shot.
Explain what stippling is.
Well, stippling is when you shoot a gun, the bullet is propelled out with gunpowder. And as that bullet travels, the gunpowder travels with it. And for a short period of time, that gunpowder is hot and can make burn marks. And that's indicative of the muzzle of the gun being very close to the target.
Meaning Colleen shot Robert at close range.
How close?
Well, we need to conduct an experiment to determine exactly how close it was.
In the next couple of days, let's get this exact gun, let's get this exact ammunition, and we can go to the firing range and set up a test.
Okay.
So that we can try to duplicate that stippling pattern.
But that's not the only test they'll have to do.
She does not have a memory of the shooting itself. Realized that she emptied her gun of all 10 shots. She estimated the shooting took no more than about 3 seconds.
In your mind, when you learn that Colleen says that she fired these 10 shots in about 3 seconds, what are you thinking?
It's pretty fast. I'm not sure how fast I could discharge 10 rounds.
Pat, you're a pretty experienced firearm handler. How fast can you get off 10 shots with this weapon?
I want to say within 15 seconds. I think she states 3 seconds. You're not going to fire 10 rounds in 3 seconds.
No, I disagree with you. I think you can fire 10 rounds. I mean, it's a semi-automatic.
Semi-automatic.
9mm. 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3.
I don't think you're letting off 10 rounds in 3 seconds.
All right, well, we'll test it.
But perhaps the most critical question in this case is this. In what order did Colleen fire those 10 shots?
Where was Rob standing when he received the first and last shot? What shots were first? What shots were last? Can we determine a sequence?
Prosecutor Jennifer Dave contends Colleen first shot Rob in the back.
He's getting ready to leave. She shot him in the back first in the buttocks. Then as he's turning, he was shot on the back 3 times. And then as he's turning around, twice on the arm, and then twice as he's going down in the front chest, and then walks up to him and shoots him in the mouth twice, basically telling him that he can't speak anymore.
But Colleen says those 2 shots were first.
There's a gunshot wound to the upper right lip. Gunshot wound number two. Entrance wound of the left upper lip. Below the vertex of the head, the bullet traveled from front to back, upward and slightly left. That's gonna be a key piece of evidence there.
You don't know whether the shots to the face were the first shots fired, the last shots fired.
We don't know that yet.
And does that make a difference?
It makes a big difference.
Why?
If the shots to the face were last, then this is murder. The only way that this is self-defense is if the shots to the face were first.
That's a key point.
Very key. So there's a lot that we're going to need to do to investigate Colleen's story.
To fill in those blanks, Scott is planning to go straight to the source.
We're going to have an opportunity tomorrow, I believe, to actually meet with Colleen herself and walk through the exact sequence of events. You know, we're going to basically take the same strategy that we did in the Oscar case. You know, we're going to walk her through the scenario and have her step by step show us how she was positioned, where he was, you know, how this whole thing evolved.
What are you expecting from this meeting with Colleen?
Hopefully the truth.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
It's the evidence room team's job to ask questions and find answers. But in this case, there's absolutely no question that on New Year's Eve 2014, Colleen McKernan shot her husband, Rob. What's still unclear is why. Was it self-defense or cold-blooded murder? To answer that question, Scott Roeder turns to the one person who can take him back to the scene of the crime.
Well, we're waiting for Colleen to arrive for a one-on-one interview.
Under house arrest and awaiting trial, Colleen McKernan arrives for a meeting with her attorney and Scott.
You know, what I hope to accomplish today with Colleen is to really break down that, you know, 3 seconds in time from the time that she, felt in fear for her life to the time that she discharged her weapon. I want to jog her recollection, to see if there's any actionable data that I can test from her statements. And I want to get her to interact with me and demonstrate with me and to me what happened. You know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit nervous.
Colleen, nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you too.
Can I have a seat?
So, you know, Colleen, as you know, my job here is to work with you to prepare a forensic animation to share with the jury you know, your version of the events as you recall them. So I need you to be as specific with me as to your recollection as much as possible. And hopefully that'll be a powerful tool, you know, for the jury to really understand what happened, you know, that night.
Are you surprised by the woman who shows up?
I am a little bit surprised. She was very cordial. She was, you know, very conversational. She seemed like a very confident woman, but I didn't want to let that affect the investigation. So now, at some point in the evening, you know, it's New Year's Eve, you probably went out to celebrate New Year's Eve with some friends, right?
Well, Rob and I left the house and went to a bar alone, just the two of us.
Okay.
And we played pool there, and we did drink a little bit. And then we went from that bar to his friend's house.
Colleen and Rob got to their friend Brittany Martin's New Year's Eve party around 9 o'clock. They stayed for about an hour, then headed to this nearby bar with two friends. After a couple of rounds of drinks, they returned to the party.
So they all went to the bar. They were gone maybe 20 minutes. They were back before 10:30.
In this police interview, Brittany Martin describes the scene she witnessed in her backyard that night.
We got to the back door. She was screaming in Rob's face. And I said, hey, there's an infant in that house next door. Her bedroom's on our side of the house. You guys can't be out here screaming like this. So either she's got to stop or you guys have to go. And Rob said, I'll just go. We'll just go. So they came up. He walked into the door first, and he looked at Zach, and he's like, kind of big deal. She's drunk. I'll just take her home. That's what it is. And then she came up behind him, and she turned around as she came through the front door and looked at us all and said, remember, this wasn't my fault.
At that party, Colleen had accused Rob of doing some sort of drugs out on the back patio. It caused a big fight. But ultimately, that fight led them to leave the party and go back to their home.
According to the coroner's report, there were no drugs found in Rob's system, but he was legally drunk.
There was an altercation in the car.
So he's driving fast, and is he drunk at this point in time?
Absolutely.
What do you learn from about their ride home?
The only person that can tell us the story about the ride home is Colleen. And what Colleen says is that Rob was extremely abusive and threatening to her.
And he opened my door, and he unbuckled me, and he ripped me out.
So he unbuckles your seatbelt, and how does he grab you?
When he grabbed me, it was, he put his arm around me, hang on, I'm sorry, like this.
And Colleen did a very effective job on, you know, kind of relaying to me how Rob grabbed her out of the car, how her feet were dangling as she was, you know, being pulled into the house.
His hand was over my mouth, so I couldn't breathe.
Okay.
And I couldn't speak, and he carried me. I could touch the ground somewhat, and I tried kicking him, but I wasn't able to breathe or speak at all, and he took me all the way up to the house like that.
By the time they made it inside, it was about 11 p.m., and the night quickly went from bad to much worse.
They were in the hallway, which is right at the top of the stairs, that he grabs her by the back of her neck and pushes her down the hallway in toward the bedroom.
He's telling me to go to the effing bedroom, and he's shoving me down the hallway, and I'm telling him to stop because he's hurting me.
Now, alone in her bedroom, Colleen says that she tried to call police for help, but caught Rob's attention instead.
According to Colleen's story, he grabs the phone, he shakes her violently.
And he, like, screamed like an animal in my face and shook the crap out of me.
With, what did he say?
He just screamed, he like roared like an animal. And when he's leaving, he's like, I'll give you a reason to call the cops, you bitch. And he left.
At that particular point, she collects her weapon, which was casually laying out in the bedroom.
I was terrified, and right. I didn't know what his threats would entail, but I thought that my life was in danger, and the gun is right next to me.
Colleen says she kept a loaded gun in the open on the windowsill near her bed.
And then she grabs, collects her gun, meets him in the hallway, and says, get out of my way, I'm leaving. You're not doing this again.
And I step forward out of the light of the doorway
okay.
to my bedroom, and he was there.
Is Rob in between her and the exit?
That's correct. Colleen leaves the bedroom. She's in the hallway, just past the doorway.
And I told him I was leaving. He took a step towards me, and I raised the gun. And I said to back up.
Okay.
I need you to back up. And he said, you're not leaving, and came towards me.
She said that Rob came toward her, took a big step forward toward her with his arms out, almost as if to either grab the gun or grab her.
So you thought he was coming to grab the gun?
Yeah.
Okay. So he came at you to grab the gun, and when did you start firing?
Immediately.
A former Air Force security officer, Colleen was well-trained in using a firearm under stress and says that training saved her life.
I mean, they always say that when you're put in a stressful situation, you always revert back to training.
Center mass.
So it's two shots to the heart, one shot to the head.
But Colleen didn't fire three shots. She fired 10, all hitting her husband.
This is where he came forward, okay? And when I was firing, he ended up with his feet ending here, and I was standing there.
There were some shots to the back.
Yes.
Alarm bell for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big indicator. Now, you know, I do a lot of police-involved shooting cases. And one of the big no-nos in police-involved shooting cases is shoot somebody in the back. Because that means they're going away. They're moving away from you. And if somebody's moving away from you, they're no longer a threat. So that is concerning to me. But in this situation, there's other gunshot wounds that aren't in the back. So we're going to have to work that out.
You must have had a million questions going through your mind hearing this story.
Well, I did, you know, focused in primarily on the physical and the forensic evidence.
You know, I just want to give you my assurances that, you know, we're going to do the best job that we can to, you know, accurately, you know, represent what happened that night.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And it was nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you, Colleen.
Walking away from this meeting with Colleen, what are you thinking?
There was an opportunity for her here to either confirm my suspicions or really, you know, turn everything on its head. But her demonstration on how those first shots took place makes sense, at least at this time. You know, after meeting Colleen today and, you know, getting her side of the story, you know, I really felt the fear that she was going through. You know, a lot of what she told me, almost everything she told me, you know, seems to just match up. You know, we'll see how it plays out with the physical evidence. Like I said, it's early. You know, we're just collecting data at this point. You know, we'll just have to take it step by step.
But before Scott can do that, he'll have to turn his attention to a new client and a new case.
In 3, 2, 1.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
48 Hours fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite 48 Hours episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like Morbid, Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries, and Small Town Murder ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Pardon My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means. Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening to 48 Hours ad-free, go to amazon.com/48hours. That's amazon.com/48hours, or download the Amazon Music app for free. It's just that easy.
With the Evidence Room team beginning its work on the McKernan case in Ohio, Scott Roeder heads back home to California. Not for a break, but to take on a new challenge, Emmanuel Bracey versus the City of Los Angeles.
How'd you first hear about the Bracey case?
I received a phone call from Brian Dunn, who's the managing partner of the Cochran Law Firm in Los Angeles, California.
As in Johnny Cochran.
That's right, one of my very first clients.
Founder of the Cochran firm, Johnny Cochran, who died in 2005, is probably best remembered for his defense of O.J. Simpson.
Remember these words: if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
He's an incredibly talented lawyer, incredibly passionate lawyer when it comes to prosecuting on a civil arena, police-involved shooting cases, and other cases regarding civil rights here in the Los Angeles community.
And this case is just that, a civil suit against the City of Los Angeles brought by 22-year-old Emmanuel Bracey, who was left partially incapacitated after being shot by four L.A. Police Department detectives.
So Bracey's suing LAPD.
That's correct.
It's a miracle that we're sitting here today fighting the case for Emmanuel Bracey and not his family members. You don't get shot like this and survive.
Miracle, maybe. But Emmanuel Bracey is anything but a saint. He's a suspect in a string of armed robberies.
So not exactly a good guy.
Not exactly somebody you'd invite over for Thanksgiving dinner. But he still has rights. And that's what this case is about.
If you talk to someone on the street about it, they're gonna say, why would you possibly take the case for this guy? He is a criminal, he is a menace to society, but he has a right to be free from excessive force from police officers.
On the morning of June 24th, 2010, Bracey was under surveillance by an LAPD Special Robbery Investigations Unit when he was seen leaving a check-and-go location, which had just been robbed at gunpoint.
And then after he gets the money and he leaves, getting a nominal amount, $800 or something like that, and he drives away. And they wait until he gets into an area that they consider safe enough to pull a VCT maneuver.
VCT.
Correct. Vehicle containment technique. And what happens is Emmanuel Bracey is pulls right here, he's right here on the side of the road, and one of the officers pulls in front, stops. One of the officers pulls behind, stops, bumpers touching. And then the third officer comes in at an angle. This is where both parties disagree what happened next.
Three of the four detectives say they saw Bracey with a gun, and they opened fire.
He is injured very severely, but he survives. And he was able to kind of fall out of the car under his own power with his hands up, where they arrested him. And then that's when they started searching the vehicle.
Bracey was taken to a nearby hospital with a shattered shoulder and left arm, broken rib, collapsed lung, broken jaw, and multiple fractured vertebrae.
One of the detectives said there's something like 23 holes in his shirt, in the back of his shirt.
Bracey, confined to a wheelchair from his injuries, pled guilty to two counts of armed robbery and was given a sentence of 25 years to life in prison. But that hasn't stopped him from seeking what he sees as justice.
Why is he in a wheelchair for the rest of his life? The attorney for the city is going to say, no, this is because of the decisions that Bracey made.
Right.
This is because of the things that he did. It was his decision to rob that store, and if he had not robbed that store, he would not be there. We're going to basically say, no. Yes, he would have been in jail. Yes, he would have spent several decades in prison. But why is it that he has the injuries that he has? It's not because of that. It's because of the actions of these detectives.
But the detectives were responding to a dangerous situation, attempting to apprehend a suspect in an armed robbery. They say they gave the command to show his hands, but he did not comply. It was at this point, according to the detective's statements, three of the four detectives saw Bracey with a gun.
And all of them opened fire, leaving both Bracey and the car heavily damaged. But when they searched the car, there was no gun in plain sight. Instead, they found a gun wrapped in cloth hidden inside an air conditioning vent in the dashboard. And though the inside of the car was covered in glass and blood, the gun was in remarkable condition.
Right here is the air conditioning vent. Inside this air conditioning vent is Bracey's gun. Bracey was sitting right here. We can see all the glass and debris all over the place. What can you see about this gun?
It looks clean.
In fact, it is clean. It was taken to the police forensics laboratory, and it was negative for blood, negative for dust, negative for glass, for anything.
There's not a drop of blood on this weapon. There's not a speck of glass on this weapon. And you know, for him to have had a gun in his hand, used the gun in a threatening position, pointed it over his shoulder the way that they're saying that he pointed it over his shoulder.
Right.
I mean, you would expect to at least see some blood,
right,
you know, on the cloth, on the gun, around the cloth, around the gun. Well, we got nothing.
And this is the foundation of the lawsuit. If Bracey wasn't holding a gun, then according to his lawyer, Brian Dunn, the detectives had no cause to shoot. And that's what Scott in the evidence room has been hired by the Cochran firm to prove.
We're out to prove that the gun was not in Emmanuel Bracey's hand, but it was, in fact, in that air conditioning vent all along.
The whole time?
The whole time.
So you're going to recreate this entire scene?
That's correct.
With real cars and
Absolutely.
Real bullets.
Yes, we have the ability to conduct this experiment in real time, to scale, under a controlled environment, and I think that would be a tremendously compelling demonstration for the benefit of the court members.
On the Nintendo Switch system, you can team up with friends in Super Mario Bros. Wonder.
Where you can meet talking flowers.
Life's full of surprises.
And where piranha plants sing. And where Mario, Luigi, and Peach turn into elephants.
Wowie zowie!
And where this announcer turns into a...
super tiny announcer!
That's not in the game.
Sorry, got a little excited. Nintendo Switch, the home of Mario and friends. Game rated E for everyone. Game and system sold separately.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and gives personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process, and they know how to help you win the right home at the right price. So download the Redfin app to get started today.
I need a shot of the side of the car. We should mark out the cars, though. Yeah, right, right here, this is where the...
Yep.
This driver is the one that puts four... through his windshield, through that windshield.
To prove a theory, you have to test that theory. And the evidence room team has set up shop here at this junkyard in the high desert just outside of Los Angeles to do just that.
So what are you trying to prove with this test?
So we are simply going to find out, was the gun in his hand or was the gun in the air conditioning vent?
They chose this remote location with good reason. Scott will be working with loaded weapons and live ammunition.
We're going to shoot this car in the same type of way, with the same guns and the same ammunition, and we're going to pulverize that glass. What we've done here is tried to set up the scene as close as possible. We've brought in an exemplar vehicle of the Lexus that Mr. Bracey was driving.
So here's the key point of this case. When a windshield breaks, it basically turns to dust.
When it's hit so many times by powerful rounds. Absolutely.
And you can see it here.
Absolutely.
On the middle console here, all over the seats, all of the dust.
Yes.
Let's go straight to X marks the spot where they discharge their weapons. That's what we need.
Right here.
All right. We've mapped out the positions of the three vehicles that were positioned along the side of the road.
And most important, they map out the position of each of the four LAPD officers who opened fire on Bracey.
Guzman's the shooter behind the window. So we've got Guzman from here.
16 feet.
Perfect, yeah. So this would be a door. He's hitting somewhere.
He's probably lined
right
up.
Right around here. I think yellow would be good to mark out just the shape outline of the car. We've also plotted out areas of the car where the gunshots penetrated the vehicle. And tomorrow we plan to conduct an experiment. And, you know, if the experiment is favorable to Mr. Bracey, well, that's great. If it's not favorable to Mr. Bracey, well, there's nothing I can do about that. All we can do is our job.
Dawn in the desert.
All right, guys, today's the day.
And days of research and preparation will end in a barrage of bullets.
So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to be placing this replica handgun in the air conditioning vent, which is similar to the placement of the Bracey gun. And we're going to be closing this up. So we'll place this gun right here. Now we've got a third replica gun. We'll place this here on the center console.
Scott wants to test Bracey's story that the gun was in the air conditioning vent when police opened fire.
We're going to do the four shots with Detective Guzman. The first part of the shooting experimentation today is going to be replicating the four shots discharged by Detective Guzman while sitting behind the wheel of his car through his windshield. All right, we're loaded. In 3, 2, 1.
Over the next several hours, Scott and his team fired round after round.
This next shot is Detective Walters.
Attempting to recreate every shot fired at Bracey by the police.
This is Detective Worrell. One shot, our distance here is about 24 feet.
With the last shot fired, it's time to check the results.
Yeah, right there, some buckshot right there.
But I think this is the shot right here. Came right through his head, that is exactly the shot. Look at all the glass debris that's coming out this way. All right, let's see what we got on the inside.
These are the guns that were out in the car that were not in the AC vent?
That's correct. You can still see quite clearly this gun is covered in debris. This gun we placed in the hand of our mannequin. I mean, it's covered in dust and pulverized glass.
And the gun, hidden in the same location that Bracey's gun was found?
Does the gun have any dust on it?
No, it doesn't have any dust on it at all. No dust, no blood. No debris of any kind.
So that says to you,
Emmanuel Bracey was in fact not holding that gun when the officers discharged their weapons.
There's just no way he had a gun in his hand.
It's impossible.
Based on that conclusion, Scott and his team prepared this presentation with their results. At trial, a lawyer for the city of Los Angeles insisted the three officers did see Bracey with a gun in his hand. And whether he was pointing it at the police or attempting to hide it in the vent, his hand came up with a gun in it, and the detectives had a reasonable perception of imminent threat. The lawyers argued that this was the critical point in the case. The detectives believed their lives were in danger and responded to that threat.
Bracey didn't necessarily have to be found to be holding a gun. It's just that the police officers have to think that he's holding a gun. Isn't that right? They just have to have a reasonable fear?
That's true. The officers need to establish that they reasonably felt in fear for their life.
In the end, after all that time and all that work, the jury never saw Scott's presentation. The reason?
The state's forensic expert just happened to be on vacation in China and was not able to testify. And after some legal wrangling, neither was Scott.
Explain that.
Well, I was a rebuttal expert on this case. So that means I was meant to rebut the testimony of one of their experts. So they decided not to call their expert witness to testify.
Which means this evidence doesn't get introduced.
That's correct.
After 9 days of court testimony, the jury took just 4 hours to return a judgment in favor of the LAPD.
According to the law, if an officer has a reasonable expectation of serious bodily injury or potential imminent death, they are justified in using deadly force.
The perception of threat is also at the center of Colleen McKernan's defense, and Scott and his team will tackle that next.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister? Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus, starting May 1st.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the Bracey case behind them, the evidence room team gets down to work on the upcoming McKernan murder trial. Their mission? To see if the evidence matches Colleen's story. First, a simple test to answer a simple question.
How could she have fired all of those 10 rounds so quickly?
Well, that's what we endeavored to find out.
So as soon as you fire, I hit start.
As soon as I start firing, and then as soon as you hear it stop, hit stop.
Got it.
And we'll get it as close as we can get it. All right, loading. Seconds.
That's under three.
That's under three.
Should we try it again?
Let's try it again. This time I think we should have Patrick try it. Pat, you want to come over here? Back when we were having our round table, Patrick and I kind of disagreed pretty much about how fast you could shoot those shots. He doesn't believe that we could fire 10 shots in under 3 seconds. So let's not share him our results just yet. Pat, I just did my test.
All right.
So why don't you go ahead and load up.
Two seconds.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that right there proves, you know, and I'm not a professional firearms handler.
And she is. So that told you she could have fired it that quickly.
Absolutely.
Next up.
All right, so now 4 feet.
4 feet.
A test to try to determine just how close Colleen was to Rob when she shot him. She says he was close and coming at her.
Jeez.
How close were they? That was a very important question to answer.
So Scott conducts a stippling test.
It's getting pretty close. I mean, it's between 2 and 3 feet so far right now. We needed to get the exact same ammunition. And then we set up these individual targets that are made covered with white cotton. And we shoot that target and we see what kind of a pattern it leaves with regard to the gunshot residue. Oh, there we go. So you can see that pretty well even without the black light. See, now we're getting pretty close. I still don't think we're there, but we're pretty close. Let's look at that picture. See how tight it is right here?
Right.
Their goal, match the pattern left from powder burns found on Rob McKernan's face, giving them an estimation of Colleen's distance from Rob at the time of the shot.
That's the best one yet.
Yeah, pattern-wise, it has the most similarities.
And I've got a pretty good spread here.
Distance is pretty close.
This is pretty good.
I like this one.
So once you found the pattern that matched the pattern on Rob's face, how far away were you?
Give or take a few inches, 2 feet.
And Colleen had said she was?
About 2 feet away when she discharged her gun.
So?
It matches. I mean, I think the stippling test is done. I think we have an answer on that.
And finally.
Penetrating into the temporal and occipital lobes of the brain, penetrates into the right occiput. All right, so we've got the...
Using data from the coroner's report, along with the crime scene photos, the team attempts to make a visual model of the 10 shots Colleen McKernan fired at her husband.
You actually poke holes in the mannequin?
Yeah, we probe the mannequin with trajectory rods. The autopsy report might read 2 inches to the left of the center line of the head, 6 inches down, we have a gunshot wound. Downward trajectory, slightly left to right, and that'll give us a good indication of where the bullet entered, where the what anatomy the bullet traversed, and where ultimately the bullet landed. So should we just penetrate right through here? Okay, so if this is 90 degrees, right?
Yep.
So we want to
slightly upward.
Slightly upward.
It's slow and tedious work.
All right, so let's take a picture of this because I think this is a good one.
One of the most difficult parts of Colleen's story to confirm is the order of the shots. Remember, she says her first shots were to Robert's face as he was upright and moving toward her.
So we've got 4 shots on the posterior side, 1 to the right buttock, 1, 2, 3 to the left lateral flank.
The prosecution maintains she shot him in the back first as he was trying to leave, and that she shot him in the face last when he was already down on the ground. And so they continue to work.
Actually, bring your hand to your left. Let's take it to his right anterior midline.
Hour after hour.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
After shot.
Shot 5, mid-right chest. 50 and a half inches above the sole of the right foot. Shots 6 through 9 are unaccounted for.
What's shot 8?
Another entrance to the left back.
Eventually, for Scott, the pieces of this jigsaw puzzle begin to come together.
After we placed all of the trajectory rods on the mannequin, it became very clear that a lot of what is happening here is starting to make sense.
But because Scott is not an expert in bullet wound analysis, he turns to someone who is.
Good morning, Dr. Spitz. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Dr. Daniel Spitz, a board-certified forensic pathologist and chief medical examiner for Macomb County, Michigan. Dr. Spitz was hired by Colleen's lawyer to testify on the medical examiner's report regarding Rob McKernan, and he's been talking with Scott.
Obviously, we're dealing with 10 gunshot wounds, and certainly there's a sequence to those wounds. Determining a sequence is very, very difficult when you're simply looking at a decedent's body. Your overall description is very accurate. I think what's important is that we don't know exactly which is the first and the second because we have 2 wounds involving the face. Could it be 2 is the first wound and number 1 is the second? Sure.
From all indications now with your research and your expert opinions and the work that we've done up until this point, I think it's starting to fit together.
Colleen has given an account of what occurred. Then really we need to look at the evidence to see if the account that she gives makes forensic sense or not. And at this point, the time frame, the movement of the body, the shots, the number of shots, his final position, and really the forensic evidence that's available really does fit with the scenario that she has given.
For Scott, it seems he has the answers he's been looking for. Now all that's left for the evidence room is to prepare their presentations for court.
So I think this is his body position as shot number 1. Maybe not so stiff and ragged, but can you take him from this position and move him into this position? Or like this a little bit? Yeah, I think that's probably the position he was in when she made that first shot.
But one question still remains. Will their work be enough to convince a jury that Colleen McKernan shot her husband in self-defense? The prosecution doesn't think so.
When the defense
started talking about how the first two shots were in the mouth. That was unbelievable to me.
Join me, 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty, on my podcast, My Life of Crime, as I take on true crime investigations like no other. This season, I'm looking into the secrets within families, cutting straight to the evidence and talking to the people directly involved. Enjoy My Life of Crime on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The evidence markers, so we have everything from where the gun was at in its resting location, shell cases.
After months of research and testing.
And then also, so I have in resting location of him.
The evidence room team puts the final touches on their presentation for Colleen McKernan's upcoming trial.
So can we bring Colleen into the scene now? Okay, so now this position ultimately is our final moment in time.
Correct.
I think this is perfect.
We get together and then start playing out these theories inside of that controlled environment to see if what we've tested, does it all make sense?
Let's see shot number two. Okay, and that's also perfect. Great work, Phil, because now he's starting to cascade down.
Now here is ultimately the final conclusion that we came to with regard to this investigation. So here's where she holds out the gun, then he reaches in, and then at the moment of the first discharge, the second one, and then we've got our third shot. Now you can see when we get to the fourth shot, he starts blading to his left. On the fifth shot, then we have the shot that goes through his arm, into his armpit, into his chest, and now he's turning, he falls down.
So I think that that's all extremely consistent with Colleen's statement.
But when the prosecution sees the animation pre-trial, they quickly move to try to keep it from being shown in court.
When we first received it, we looked at a lot of different things, compared them to the coroner's report. They were not consistent. So we filed motions ahead of time to keep it out because it was inaccurate. Jurors these days like to see that kind of stuff. If they have a video that they can see, they'll like, okay, maybe that is how it happened. But it was inaccurate.
So will the jury ever see the animation?
How important do you think your work is to this case?
I think it could be critical.
Opening statements will begin today in the trial that will answer the question, self-defense or cold-blooded murder. Colleen McKernan is accused of killing her husband, Rob McKernan.
On April 19th, 2016, almost 16 months after the New Year's Eve shooting of Rob McKernan, Colleen McKernan's trial for murder begins.
Colleen pulled the trigger 10 times. And she hit him 10 times. The evidence will show you that this defendant, Colleen McKernan, committed murder.
I think what this evidence is really going to show at its end is the old saying that some of you may have heard, that you never know what someone's dealing with behind closed doors. And that's what this case is all about.
So Trial begins. Are you prepared to testify?
Absolutely. I am prepared to testify, and I'm looking very much to getting on the stand.
The state begins its case with testimony about the New Year's Eve party.
I could see her out the back door, and she was pointing at Rob, and she was yelling. I said she has to either stop screaming or they had to go. One or the other had to happen, but they couldn't continue this way in the backyard.
I got on Facebook not long after they left and saw that a wife had shot and killed her husband, and I just read
and testimony from responding personnel.
I went upstairs. I immediately saw the victim on the floor.
I noticed a hole to his lower left side. I noticed a hole in the center of his chest, and also what looked to be a half moon shape cut out of his lip from, I'm assuming, a bullet in his mouth.
I noticed that there were numerous teeth that were shattered, and there was severe damage to the maxilla area, the upper jaw.
And then prosecutors turned to their forensic experts.
This particular item is a Glock Model 26 9mm Luger semi-automatic pistol. All 10 fired 9mm Luger cartridge cases were fired in the submitted Glock pistol.
His cause of death is classified as a homicide.
On the stand, forensic pathologist Dr. Frank Miller is very clear about the number of shots and the damage they did.
Which is broken down, 8 gunshot wounds of trunk, 2 gunshot wounds of head. And then I note that there's bleeding in the right chest, the left chest, the abdomen, and around the heart, and perforations of brain, heart, lungs, liver, pancreas, aorta, spleen, left kidney.
But as to the sequence of shots, he says it's unlikely that determination could be made from the evidence available in this case.
It's extremely difficult. That's why my reports always say they're numbered 1 to 10, but there's no regard to how severe they are or what the order or chronological sequence is.
Ladies and gentlemen, the state has rested, and we are at the stage of the proceedings at which time the defense is choosing to present evidence at this time.
The defense team presents its case with testimony from experts in psychology.
She knew what he was capable of when he was drunk, when he was mean, and her perception at that time of the risk to her life was different, in my opinion, than a person who had not had a battered woman syndrome.
And testimony from forensic expert Dr. Daniel Spitz.
What to a reasonable degree of medical and scientific certainty in the realm of forensic pathology were you able to opine in this case?
Well, I was able to opine that the injuries occurred over a brief period of time. I was able to indicate that Mr. McKernan was shot while in an upright position, and that the sequence that I indicated was certainly a very plausible sequence based on the evidence, and that they were in very close proximity, within a couple of feet, at the time that he sustained the wounds.
Scott Roeder is standing by, waiting to testify.
I've got my ticket bought, my bags are packed, and I am being left in the dark. Nobody's telling me anything.
So do you finally get that call?
Actually, I don't think it was a call. I think it was a text message from Ian, and he said, Scott, we're not going to use you.
Ian Friedman, Colleen's attorney, said the judge so limited the scope of Scott's presentation that Ian decided not to use it. So the jury never sees the animation and never hears from Scott. And so Colleen is called as the final defense witness.
Did you shoot Robert McKernan on December 31st, 2014?
Yes, I did shoot.
Did you pull that first trigger on the evening of December 31st, 2014?
I was defending myself.
Without the animation to show the jury, the defense chooses another method of demonstrating what Colleen says happened that night.
And he grabs me, pulls me out of the car, and he was hoisted me up and covered my mouth and took me back to the front of the house.
Defense attorney Eric Long and Colleen McKernan demonstrate for the jury how her husband restrained her.
And he said, you're not going anywhere, and he's moving towards me, both moving, and I'm coming here, and I'm like, back up, back up, back up, and he's not coming, and he wanted to let me, and that's when I fired the gun.
But Prosecutor Dave has a few questions of her own.
Isn't it fair to say, actually, that Rob was getting ready to leave?
No, he was not leaving.
You were angry, you grabbed the gun, and went after him. Isn't that true?
No, I was trying to leave the house. I was trying to leave.
You shot Rob in his buttock area first. Isn't that true?
No, he was facing me at the top of the stairs when he was coming towards me, and I was screaming, back up, back up, back up, and he didn't.
And as he's turning, realizing what you were doing, you shot him three more times in the back. Isn't that true?
No, he was facing me.
Then you continued to shoot him as he's turning towards you, correct?
No, that's incorrect.
And then as he's going down, you shoot him two more times in the chest. Isn't that true?
No, he was facing me.
And then as you walked up to him and saw him laying down on that ground or on that floor, you put two more shots in his mouth. Isn't that true?
No, that's not true at all.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
The jury has seen 7 days of testimony, as well as clear evidence of the damage left behind on the faces of Rob's parents, Kathy and Dennis McKernan.
I'm never, ever going to be the same. I'm going to miss my son forever.
What has Colleen done to my family is destroyed our family completely.
This horrific crime has just ripped my soul out.
And the faces of Colleen's parents, Gary and Jan Owen.
Never thought 28 years ago, when Colleen was basically an infant, that I'd ever be standing here and talking about a situation like this. It's been awful.
From the start, it's a tragic situation, no matter how it turns out.
Now, both families can only wait for the jury's decision.
Deliberations are now underway in the Colleen McKernan murder trial. 10 men and 2 women now responsible for deciding the fate of the 28-year-old.
I don't know what to expect. I'm anxious for some closure, especially today. But on the other hand, I'm afraid of today.
You're just waiting for the phone to ring. The jury's in, or the jury, you know, what is going on? We don't know, but we're prepared for whatever decision the jury makes.
But no one was prepared to hear that after 2 days of deliberations.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have considered the case for a considerable period of time, and I have now received your note indicating that you are unable to reach a verdict.
The jury's decision was no decision at all.
Based upon the jury's inability to reach a decision in this case, I will declare a mistrial.
Deadlocked.
What'd you think?
Well, I think it demonstrated that the prosecutor didn't have a good enough evidence.
When the verdict came out, I mean, I just cried. I didn't know what was gonna happen. It just left me in limbo.
It's disappointing, but glass half full. She's not in jail today.
But the state intends to try Colleen again.
A new true crime podcast from the team behind Up and Vanished. In 2016, Justin Alexander, an adventurer, was invited on a trek by an Indian holy man. They headed to a spiritual ground in the Himalayan mountains, a place beyond civilization. The holy man returned and said nothing, but Justin was never seen again. What happened to him? Dive deep into our investigation and uncover the strange events surrounding Justin's disappearance in Status Untraced. Check out this sneak preview.
And this last experience he had with Rawat, I didn't feel good about it. In fact, I felt it was dangerous. It sounds strange, but I just, in my mother's heart, something was not okay. I felt that he was a nefarious character.
Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Since the end of her first trial, Colleen McKernan has been home under house arrest, anxiously awaiting the start of her second trial for the murder of her husband, Robert McKernan.
So you're saying that if it was this, and then he turned and this happened here.
Now, the night before her trial begins, Colleen is doing what she can to help her new defense team, lawyers Laura Mills and Max Hiltner.
So these ones here are moving that way.
Yeah, the bullets.
With just 10 weeks to prepare their case, Colleen's new legal team has faced many challenges, not the least of which is that neither lawyer has ever tried a murder case before.
We have really, really worked hard. We've worked weekends. We've worked nights. We have just helped each other as much as we can get ready.
So if he's leaning forward like that, though, then the shot sequence is fine.
Also here to help is Scott Roeder.
It was difficult for me to tell visually the stippling pattern related to number first shot and the second shot.
That first meeting was incredibly productive, and it was truly a meeting of the minds.
Our theory is the left lip shot is second. Its stippling patterns is contained within the pattern of gunshot wound one.
This time around, the team is determined to use what they can of Scott's presentation.
We have every intention of utilizing the animation this time. When talking to the jurors from the first trial, they indicated that would have been helpful.
Visual evidence is the most powerful thing. You have to remember, the jury's going to forget about 75% of everything everybody says.
Colleen is the most important part of the trial. Without question. Then what we build around her is the science. It's very important, that shot sequence. Very important to see that animation and so they can visualize what went on.
On the morning of August 23rd, 2016, Colleen McKernan finds herself once again in front of a judge and jury and facing a new team of prosecutors, Dennis Barr and Melissa Day.
So, State of Ohio, you may present your opening statement at this time.
The state is confident, ladies and gentlemen, that after you have heard all of the evidence, that you will be convinced that this defendant did not act in self-defense, but committed a cold-blooded act of murder.
On New Year's Eve, 2014, Colleen McKernan was faced with a choice: to defend her life or to have her life taken.
Once again, the jury hears from a parade of witnesses.
And I looked at him and I said, listen, she's either got to shut the F up or she's got to get the F out.
There was something posted that a wife had shot and killed her husband.
This particular item I can recognize as a Glock Model 26 pistol.
There were two gunshot wounds to the mouth.
The cause of death is multiple 10 gunshot wounds of head and trunk. The manner of homicide was recommended to the coroner.
But this time...
Please state your full name for the record.
Scott George Roeder.
Do you own your own company?
Yes, I do.
And what's the name of that company?
Evidence Room.
Scott gets a chance to present some of his work to the jury.
Video number one essentially is a combination of transitions between the case file materials that I was given and my CGI model, which is a computer graphic image. Video number three essentially is... my review of Dr. Miller's autopsy report. He describes the positioning of each of the 10 gunshot wounds.
I was scanning the jury as I was talking, and I saw a lot of people, you know, okay, they understand, they got it.
So we used those measurements to plot out the gunshot wounds on the victim.
And then there was Cross.
Yes.
First of all, you were not present on December 31st, 2014, correct?
No, I was not there.
Okay.
Prosecutor Day uses her cross-examination to challenge Scott and his work.
Now, you had indicated that one of the things that you had reviewed with regards to video 3 was the autopsy report of Dr. Miller.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you a forensic pathologist?
No.
Are you aware that Dr. Miller also testified that he could not provide a specific sequence of shots based on the wound patterns that he found in the medical evidence?
Yeah, I'm aware.
How sure are you that this is how it happened?
Well, I would call this the most probable version of the events based on the evidence.
So it's still a version, it's still a theory.
Correct.
But?
A probable version, a probable theory.
So you are telling me you are doing additional medical determinations beyond what the coroner themselves
It's not
done.
Medical.
It's not medical?
No.
All right, thank you. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
And once again, Colleen takes the stand to tell her story.
And I'm like, I'm leaving, you know, I'm leaving, and I'm trying to walk towards the stairs. And he's like, you're not going anywhere. And I ended up raising the gun, and he saw it, and I started screaming, back up, and he did it. And he didn't, so I pulled the trigger.
And again, Colleen is crossed by the prosecution.
Stand up, please.
Objection.
Okay, sustained. Mr. Barr, if you are going to ask the witness to do something, then ask her to demonstrate.
Would you put your arms out like you're shooting a gun, please? Objection. Did you get this close?
Overruled.
He was there. He was there.
Very
close.
And you're pointing at my chest, right?
I don't know. I just pulled the trigger.
And he could have went like this, couldn't he? He could have grabbed that gun if he was that
he
close.
He was close enough, yes.
After 6 days of testimony.
She is not a battered woman, ladies and gentlemen. She is a murderer. The evidence proves it. And I ask you to return that verdict. Thank you.
We ask that you return a not guilty verdict to the charge of murder against Colleen McKernan.
Both sides rest. And for a second time, the case goes to the jury.
So going into deliberations, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking we had an acquittal. I felt very good that we had an acquittal. But things don't always go as you think.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, with additional time, do you believe that it would be possible for you to reach a unanimous verdict?
Deja vu all over again. The same identical deliberation. They deliberate for 2 days. They come back. They're deadlocked again.
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 Because you are unable to reach a verdict, I will declare this case a mistrial.
All that work.
We're right back where we started.
How frustrating is that?
It's very frustrating, but, you know, that's the jury system that we have. You know, I guess at this point, maybe we get ready for round three.
But as it turned out, there would be no round three. 6 months after the second mistrial, the state of Ohio had had enough. On March 17th, 2017.
It has been brought to the court's attention that a resolution of this matter has been reached.
Colleen and her family and the McKernan family find themselves back in court one last time.
Ms. McKernan, then, as to one count of voluntary manslaughter, a felony of the first degree, how do you plead?
Guilty.
As to the firearms.
And with that one word, more than 2 years of waiting for justice are over.
The prosecutor called my lawyers and presented a plea offer. I decided that what was best for me, my family, was to take the plea offer. I can't go up against life in jail one more time and sit through it all over again.
I could see there was, how do I put this, justice served to a certain point.
All right, it's not the type of justice I wanted to see. We lost our son, okay, over a vicious act from a lunatic woman.
We know that they lost a son and a brother, a dad. We know, we understand that. And I can tell you, I can tell the McKernan family and everyone that Colleen is sorry that Rob is dead, but she's not sorry for defending herself.
It will be the further sentence of the court that you serve a total prison term of 7 years.
I thought she'd turn around and say how sorry she was for her actions on that night on December 31st, 2014. She did not.
In this situation, there's no winner. And nobody's coming out on top. And it's not lost on me, the pain that Rob's family's feeling. And I hope that they're able to find peace and healing and move forward and are able to let it all go.
Colleen McKernan is currently serving her sentence at the Ohio Reformatory for Women. She could be released as early as September 2020 by a judge's decision based on her behavior in prison.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the 48 Hours podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Take true crime with you on your shirt, mug, or hat with official 48 Hours merchandise at ParamountShop.com. You can take 20% off with code HOURS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all 48 Hours products with code HOURS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.